episode 188, recorded December 2nd, 2013.
Greetings, Aquarium Xers.
Hello. I can't believe it's December.
I know.
I still feel like it's not quite November yet.
So, I suffer under the delusion that it's August.
Yes, August was a while ago.
I know. It's okay.
Yes. So we have Tom and Provo today, and Poland. Oh, Poland, Portugal. That sounds new.
It is new.
I don't think we've ever had anybody from Portugal before.
No, we never have.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Tony, New York, and Matt in Perth, Australia, and Juliet, and it doesn't say, but I'm assuming she's still in Paris.
Yes.
Unless she has moved elsewhere.
Paris, France, in fact.
Well, yes, not Paris, Texas.
Right.
Right. Usually, if it's Paris, Texas, you have to say Paris, Texas, because if you just say Paris, everybody assumes France.
Okay.
Just like, if you say Dr. Bob, you assume North Shore, Boston.
But not our new listeners. They don't know.
But they will learn.
Okay.
Okay. And then after Juliet, we have Mick also in Carnforth, which is in the UK and also not in Texas.
Okay.
I don't think there's a Carnforth in Texas, so maybe that's not so confusing.
Yeah, we have some other submissions, but I don't know if we'll be able to get to them this week because we got so many.
Plus, that's good. I don't think we have anybody from Texas.
We're glad we have lots of them.
Yes. We like everybody that we have.
Yes. And we have had people from Texas before.
We have. We liked them when we had them.
And we still do.
We do.
Okay.
Sorry, guys. It might be one of those nights.
Well, shall we dig in?
It's going to be a little silly.
Let's dig in.
Okay. So we're going to start with Tom in Provo.
Okay. Oh, before we do that, sorry.
Oh, before.
Just have an interruption.
Let's not actually begin.
Okay.
Okay. Just do your interruption.
Okay. Okay. My interruption is, we're trying a new thing with our recorder, so let us know how this shot goes, how this session goes.
Not shot.
Not shot.
Nobody's getting shot.
No, let us know how this session goes, because we're trying lots of different things to make sure that it works well, okay? So there you go. Thank you.
Okay. So, Tom and Provo, hearing about your project for colony breeding of Corys brought to mind the one time that egg layers ever produced viable fry in one of my tanks. I had a 55-gallon, very little knowledge of fish keeping, and not much access to information about the hobby. The water was topped off, but rarely changed, and neither ammonia nor nitrates were measured. This was that dark age before the internet. I'm not even sure fish keeping was called the hobby back then. I had a couple of albino corys, and tiny new corys appeared from time to time. Unfortunately, one or two were born with what appeared to be crooked spines. At the time, we attributed this to inbreeding among fish in a very small gene pool, but looking back, I've begun to wonder if the problem was more likely caused by what was probably near toxic water in which the fish spawned and the eggs hatched. Can you offer at least a tentative opinion on this very cold case file? Was it bad water or romance among fishy cousins, or perhaps a deformity that albino corys are prone to? And then he says, maybe my question is really whether there's a rule of thumb for how many generations can be in a tank before new stock should be added to the gene pool.
Hmm. Okay. Well, it's a complex question with a complex set of answers, really. But let's see what we can come up with. First of all, water quality can impact skeletal development, among other things. But malnutrition can also do that. Genetics can do it. Illnesses can do it. I remember back in the 80s, my guppies, before I did regular water changes, when I was doing the top-off thing, they would produce occasional stunted fish with crooked backs, and once I began a decent water changing regimen, that's kind of cleared up and became much less common. But at the same time, I was also removing the deformed fish from the gene pool and introducing new blood periodically, so it's hard to say what exactly was the deciding factor there, or if they were all factors. I did a little googling on albino corys just to see on spinal deformities, and it does seem that it shows up fairly commonly. And of course, the albino corys are fairly inbred. They do have a fairly small genetic diversity to start with, and it's likely that your fish, if you bought them at the same time, were probably siblings or closely related at any rate. And although the dangers of inbreeding are often misunderstood and exaggerated with fish. It depends on the type of fish partly, but it also depends on many other factors. But basically, fish that are line bred, like for example, show bettas or show goldfish, are line bred for many generations. It's very common to spawn bettas with their siblings.
What does line bred
mean? Line breeding means very selective inbreeding, basically.
Like they're from the same line?
Yeah, and they're from the same line, and you're breeding several generations in a row, going for certain traits, but using closely related individuals to accomplish that.
Okay.
That's very common with many, many show fish. And breeding siblings is also very common when you go to the store and you pick up half a dozen whatevers, angelfish, out of the same tank. It's very likely that they're, especially if they're fried,
they all came from the same batch.
That they all came from the same batch. And so that's very common. And as long as you are careful about culling and, you know, selecting very good stock for breeding with, you can do it for quite a number of generations without
issue.
Problems.
Well, not without issue. You're hopefully getting issue, but maybe without issues.
Yeah, without any problems. But eventually, you know, it does sort of reduce the... Well, it definitely reduces the genetic diversity, and so they're more vulnerable to various things. One of them, just the fact that any recessive genes are going to show up. And if there are bad ones, they're going to show up, you know, and they're going to be something you're going to have to deal with. But I have bred fish for a number of generations without seeing any issues and any negative problems. But then at the same time, I had an issue with the dwarf neon rainbows that we had.
Mm-hmm.
They are apparently not very genetically diverse. They come from a small genetic pool, and they are not very hardy in terms of resistance to the mycobacterium. So they eventually succumbed to that.
They did. That was sad.
So there are issues with that. And hopefully that kind of explained it. There isn't really a rule of thumb per se, but you have to be careful to cull stock that does show problems. And
what do you do with the culled ones? Does it just depend?
It depends. You just make sure they don't breed. That's the issue. Make sure they don't breed. So in a lot of cases, that means you just put them in a tank, take care of them, and don't preserve any of the fry. It can be as simple as that. Other people will take individuals that they don't want breeding, and they will humanely dispose of them, or they will feed them to something, or, you know, different things like that. So depends on what works for you. So there you go.
And Tom signs his email, Beatus est Pisciculus.
And he had to change that because?
He says, I changed signature line so I would not have to worry about whether it should be the fish is with me or the fish are with me, because fish is not really a count noun.
Well, it depends.
Well, I suppose it can be singular.
You're speaking of different species of fish.
I guess you could say one fish.
But you can say two fish.
But fish can also be
same species.
Plural. So. Yeah. Yes. So really, you could probably pick one and be fine. But you can say Beatus est Pisciculus also.
I like that one too.
What does that mean? The fish is beautiful?
No, it means blessed is the little fish.
Blessed is the little fish.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's cute.
It is.
Yes. Okay, so we have Paul in Portugal.
And a new contributor,
yes,
as you mentioned.
So welcome.
Welcome, welcome.
He says, first of all, let me congratulate you on your program. I initially found aquaradio.net and the delightful Sounds Fishy to Me podcast from Frank, and I felt pretty sad when I ended them and found out that the program was discontinued. I'm uncertain about the reasons. I didn't know about those ones. There they are.
We've lost a lot of them in the past few years, haven't we? Sad.
It's kind of sad. Sometime after I found your program... Oh, it's been some time since I found your program, and I'm spending countless hours listening to it here in Portugal. The format of your program is really cool, but I must confess the ones that I really enjoy the most are those with interviews with a special remark to the interview with James Carmack. That was really outstanding. Yeah, he was pretty neat to talk to.
It was fun, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you enjoyed them. Well, it was two of them because we cut it into two pieces, wasn't it?
Yeah. I had a crazy idea to get some interviews with experts, translate them to Spanish and Portuguese, this last one with some help, and post them in a written form to get all the fish passionates that missed this cool info due to language reasons. I already contacted James, another wonderful hobbyist, to see what we can do about it. Oh, like translating our episodes?
Yeah.
That would be neat.
That interviews, at least, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would be really cool. So I wanted to ask you if you would mind me transcribing and translating the interview you had there with James. I would definitely link your channel to indicate where the original interview took place. I would also like to encourage you to keep having interviews like this. I was really fascinated. Many greetings and keep up the good work.
Cool. Well,
I think that's a great idea.
I do too.
Go for it.
And I told them, yeah, go mm-hmm. for it as long as
James is okay with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you want them to send you the transcript before they release it because you speak both Spanish and Portuguese?
I'm sure I don't speak them as well as Paul does.
No, I just meant, do you want to look at them?
Oh, that would be fun, though.
Yeah. Because you like to do languagey things.
I do. That's true. It'd be kind of fun.
Mr. Linguist.
At least the link to the site.
Yeah.
We could maybe post them on our site, too, if we...
Yeah, that would be really good.
Yeah, cross-link it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Okay, Tony in New York. Hello, Tony. He says, as you may recall, I was having a scum issue with my 6-gallon shrimp tank. It seems to be doing much better now, and I wanted to thank you, Russ, and also Mick, for the great advice. Mick, you may be on to something there about being more prone to scum when feeding worms. This tank actually has quite the colony of planaria, and I have a feeling this is a contributing factor. I stepped up the water changes and have cleaned everything thoroughly. I had previously considered whether I could get a UV light for this tank or a protein skimmer. To me, it seemed too difficult to obtain a UV light of a size appropriate for a 6-gallon tank, and of course, I don't think a protein skimmer would work on a freshwater tank. But, Mick, would you be willing to say a little more about the polyfilter you mentioned in episode 185? Is it an actual filter or just the medium? If you provided a link, that would be dandy. I would want to be sure to get the right kind. Russ, the image is not showing up for me in the show notes for some reason.
Ah, I will have to fix that. I had forgotten sure when I read there. That. But to answer some of those, UV, you can get UV filters for nanotanks. I've seen them for nanotanks. Dr. Foster and Smith has one. I was just checking their catalog recently, and they have that.
Oh, okay.
But not to say that is something for Tom's particular situation, but just to throw that out there.
And Tony.
Oh, Tony. I mean, sorry, I said the wrong name. Both start with T, though.
We do T-O, even.
Yeah, that's true. Sorry, Tony. I can tell you apart. I'm just confused right now. Okay. Where was I? Oh, yes. In protein skimmers, that's true. They won't work in fresh water because the water is not viscous enough. Salt water is more viscous, and that's why protein skimmers work. But the polyfilter is a filter medium. It's not a filter, per se. You can add it to a filter. And I will see if I can find a link to it. And Mick, if you happen to just have one, that would be cool. I'm pretty sure it's available stateside.
Is it just polyester?
No.
It's not the medium the batting
that
stuff.
Absorbs stuff. It's yeah.
Okay.
So I'll see if I can get a link to it up.
Okay.
Maybe Mick, if you've got one that ready made, you can just send it to me if you like. That'd be great. And I'll see what I can find.
He says, he finishes with, anyway, if scum is 99% of the time not anything to worry about, then those odds sound pretty good to me. Mick, I value your advice. Thanks for offering it. And Russ and Kelly, congratulations on the new field recorder. Really enjoying all the shows as always. Happy holidays to all. So, thank you.
Yeah.
And happy holidays to you too.
Indeed. And I have one more thing to say.
Okay, what do you...
Curse you, aqua scum!
That's a pretty good line.
It's a good quote from Finding Nemo.
Yes,
it
is.
That fits right here, right?
Yes.
Maybe we won't have to worry about Tom's aqua scum anymore because it will be gone.
Tony's aqua scum.
I mean, I said Tom again. Are you serious?
Yes.
I totally did. I'm sorry, Tony. See, I said Tony that time. I've been sick lately. Sorry.
Yeah, so me have you. Too. I'm still
My brain's still not up to snuff yet. Okay.
Yes. My voice is still not up to snuff.
But just in case you're wondering, Tony, I just said Tony again. I do know it's Tony. There you go.
Okay. We love you both.
Yes.
Okay. So, Matt in Australia. He says, just a quick amendment. I ended up buying a single Jaeger 300-watt single heater. The 6-foot tank has now been using an average of 4 kilowatts per day now, which is halving the electricity cost. I also found an Australian company offering 3-foot marine LED lights that use 21 watts for $100. I measured the current lighting by itself, and it is actually using 160 watts. So if I buy 2 of the 3-foot marine LEDs, that should use 42 watts, or a quarter of the power, and it will pay for itself within 18 months in saved electricity.
That is cool. I do have one caveat, though.
What?
That brings to mind. Marine lighting can be, it's very different in terms of color, temperature, and whatnot from freshwater lighting. So it might change how the algae grows in your tank. It might encourage algae a bit more. Different, let's see, a lot of the marine fixtures and the marine LED lighting will get into the more like the 10,000K type range, 8,000K, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not the best for freshwater plants, in which, you know, you want around 65, 6700K. So that's something to think about, but it sounds like it's a good way to save energy, and it may not be that much of a problem depending on the setup, so worth a look.
Yeah. I think it's kind of staggering that it's using that much electricity that's so expensive.
Oh, and they are Australian dollars, so I don't know actually how that compares to U.S. dollars right now, but...
It's still a big number.
It's still a big number.
Yeah. Okay, so we're on Juliet. We haven't heard from Juliet for a while, so welcome back, Juliet. Unless we did, and I'm spacing out.
No, we haven't. This is it's been a while.
Okay, she says, my nano shrimp tank looks terrible. All the sides are covered in algae and calcium deposits. I would like to take all the shrimp out and put them in another tank for a few days so as to be able to clean the nano up. Should I just put the old substrate in the other tank with the water from the nano too and all the plants, hook up the filter, and that would be okay? These shrimp die if I do too great a water change, so I'm scared the whole process might shock them to death. What advice can you give me?
And I actually emailed Juliet on this, because it sounded like something she was just about to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that I thought it would be a good idea to do basically what she said.
Mm-hmm.
But depending on the substrate, if, you know, if it's going to be a kind of a thick substrate with a lot of detritus in it, it might actually be kind of dangerous to move the substrate.
Is it going to, like, disturb anaerobic bacteria or something?
Basically, yeah. If there are anaerobic or anoxic pockets in there, mm-hmm, that have been creating hydrogen sulfide, and you stir that up, that could, you know,
be a problem.
Yeah, kill the shrimp as it goes into the bubbles up out into the water. So I suggested that if she believes that would be the case, then to just move most of the water and the filter along with the medium, and don't change the filter media, and just keep
and
them there for a little while. And then maybe if the filter media is robust and healthy, and there's going to be lots of healthy bacteria in there, maybe consider doing a deep clean of the substrate. Because shrimp, there's not that much bioload there. And so if you've got a healthy bacterial colony going in this filter, you probably wouldn't have a new cycle going when you put them back, even if you had washed the substrate out. But if the substrate is, you know, just a thin layer of gravel and so on, and it doesn't have a lot of detritus in it, it wouldn't matter.
Okay. Just if it's thick and has pockets in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So hopefully that works.
Oh, I hope they do well. The poor shrimp.
I know. Thing about the water changes, mm-hmm, it puzzles me, and I wish we could do something to solve it. I can do a 50% or even 80% water change on that tank over there with the shrimp, and it doesn't do a thing.
Well, it's not a nano tank either.
It isn't, which is true.
Sometimes
but
those are a little bit more sensitive.
I think we have pretty decent water here for them. It seems to work fine. Uh-huh.
We have really hard water.
Yeah, we have pretty hard water, but
excuse me. Sorry.
It seems to work fine, so I don't know.
Let us know how it goes.
Yeah, we'd be interested in hearing how everything pans out, hopefully well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we are on Mick now.
Okay.
And he says, great job on your first recording with the new equipment. Volume quite low, but otherwise good stuff, which I think we're working out how to up the intake.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. I'm playing with a lot of different settings to try to find out what works here. Like I've mentioned before, I use the same machine at work, but the conditions are a bit different. And so working out how to make it work the way it should here is it's going to be a little puzzling, but
we'll get there. We're trying something a little bit different this week, microphone-wise. So, you know, everybody make a comment on the Facebook page or write in and tell us too loud, too quiet, distorted, clear,
yeah,
anything, you know.
Any and all input is appreciated as it helps us figure out what to do and what not to do.
And then maybe once we figure that out, we can put the music back in.
Oh, I've been putting the music back in.
Oh, you've been putting the music back in? Oh, okay. Scratch that part. Okay.
I don't have the little intro and outro stuff that we say, or the break that we say. I don't have that yet.
That's okay, because didn't I say something like, this is the break part, this is the break part, this is the break in the podcast that we sit here and talk to you, and then we're done with the break.
No, I don't think you ever said anything like that.
Isn't it the Olympics this winter? I don't know. So out of it. I never know when they are anymore. Okay, that was a random little thing. I told you it was going to be one of those nights.
Okay.
Okay, shall I tell you what Mick says?
Yes, please.
Okay, see, I'm messing up names too. We're all tongue-tied over here tonight. Okay, we are partway through a lighting changeover in the shop, swapping the overhead fluorescent tubes to LED. It's a terrific improvement with half the energy use and a much brighter, cleaner light all around. Even with the initial outlay, we should recoup the cost within 18 months. Oh, he's got 18 months too.
Yeah.
I have used Malefix for many years without problems, but recently had to change treatments. Fish started having bad reactions, particularly killifish, but also the puffers and gudids.
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 Depends on who says it. Okay. But yeah.
Amongst others, seem to suffer. So now I'm using Esha 2000 with very good results, and so far no bad effects.
I've never tried that. We should look that up.
What is the treatment for? Is it just kind of an all-around treatment?
Well, Malefix tends to be a treatment for external ailments.
Like scratches parasites? Scratches
in the skin, just basically things on the outside.
Okay.
It tends to be a wide, various different symptoms can be treated with it, or conditions can be treated with it.
So Esha 2000, it's ESHA 2000.
ESHA, okay.
So that's something similar then, I guess, huh?
I don't know.
What are gudids?
Gudids are live bear, but they're quite a bit different from like the big four that you're familiar with.
Yeah, because I've never heard of these guys.
Exactly. They're different. And they tend to be, you know, rather stocky, I guess might be a word to use.
Mm-hmm.
And
kind of thick-bodied?
Thick-bodied, kind of, yeah, in a way. More so than, like, guppies tend to be kind of thinner. And I mean, females are big and robust, but their bodies are deeper. Even the males have deeper bodies and so on. There are quite a few different kinds and so on. Mm-hmm. Not terribly popular in the pet stores. You don't see them here very much.
You should put a picture up for me.
Okay.
Alrighty. Anything else?
Is that all we have?
That's everybody.
Oh, well.
We just zipped right through that.
We were going to talk to Dr. Bob. You know, Dr. Bob was... we've got a thing for Dr. Bob.
Well, you don't have it on the little notes for me here, so...
Okay. Well, we just had a pause so that we could fix things, but we're going to go ahead.
You didn't know we had a pause because...
Oh, they knew.
No. They can hear it. But it didn't pause for them is what I mean.
Oh, okay.
It just went, and now we're back.
Okay.
Just like, oh, we're going to take a break. Now we're back.
Okay.
See? It was a very short break.
Something like
that. You had to pee fast.
What?
It was a pee break. This is what breaks are for, is for people to go to the bathroom. That's why people had intermission in movies.
Oh, okay.
What do you think they had an intermission for?
I don't know.
To buy popcorn and candy and soda and to go to the bathroom.
I guess that's what... Okay, I just didn't know why you were bringing the bathroom into things all of a sudden.
Because I told you, it's going to be one of those nights.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk about Dr. Bob.
Yes. Dr. Bob.
Dr. Bob. We didn't know we were going to have enough time to do it because we had so many contributors.
But look at us. We talked so lickety-split fast.
So we're glad to be able to include Dr. Bob in this episode. So let's do that.
Okay. So Dr. Bob says, a few weeks back, I had a question about a sick fish. I believe the diagnosis of bacterial infection was correct. The infection looked like white threads of cotton stuck to the fish. As you said, Russ, bacteria are opportunistic and will infect any exposed, unprotected tissue. Additionally, it is not atypical for there to be some tissue damage during transport, especially with fish ordered via the internet. The two fish in question had abrasions to the premaxillary and dentary regions, or nose, due to, I believe, rough handling and or thrashing in transit. Sorry, I gotta take a breath. I still got this cough and I get a little out of breath.
You're okay to breathe.
Okay, that's good, because if I wasn't okay to breathe, we'd have a problem. Okay. I selected the Melaleuca oil therapy to treat the infection. However, I chose not to administer the treatment to the tank and instead used the dipping method. Does that mean, like, he takes the fish out and he dips it in water that's treated with it, or in just straight Melaleuca oil?
No, water that's treated with it.
Okay, because I was going to say, wow, that would sting. I chose this method because I wanted to treat the fish, not the tank, and I wanted to avoid the possibility of crashing the quarantine tank system. I dosed a small container with the correct amount of the Melaleuca oil, dipped the fish in the treated water for 30 minutes, and then removed them to the quarantine tank. I repeated the treatment once daily for 1 week. The outcome was mixed, but explainable. One fish completely recovered and one fish did not. I believe that the fish that succumbed was too stressed and the infection too extensive by the time treatments began. Russ, you asked if the fish are natives from my unheated tank, which is currently holding at 63 degrees Fahrenheit. Yes, they are native fish that I have purchased from an internet company. Excuse me, sorry guys. You also asked about the species. The fish species is Enneacanthus catodon?
Sure.
Sure, why not? Okay. Or black-banded sunfish. I find nothing that indicates these are especially vulnerable to infections, but cannot imagine that there might be differences in the natural waters from one region to another, and since I keep native plants in my tank, they would likely have native bacteria cultured on them. Now that I have 15 fish and several shrimp in this 55-gallon aquarium, the feeding regimen has increased significantly. The primary foods used are redworms and bloodworms. They will not eat any of the prepared foods like pellets or flakes, and they don't touch freeze-dried tubiflex worms or shrimp. They will eat frozen or fresh only. I suspect this is typical of natives, especially wild caught.
That has been my, well, has it been my experience? I guess in the native fish I've kept, think about that for a minute. I don't know. I think it's common for a lot of species of native fish.
Because they don't have pellets and flakes in the wild. It's kind of like, you know, lions in Africa don't eat dry cat food.
I guess so.
I have a question about my grindleworm culture. I am not seeing much change in the population of the two containers I have. I have the worms in the basement where the temperature is in the low 60s. Is this too low for decent propagation? My iPad just turned off. Hang on. Okay, it's back. It's back. Okay. What is the ideal temperature?
That is a lovely question, and I can answer this one easily, too. I love it when I can do that. Grindleworms do better in the mid-70s to low-80s.
That's true.
So they will grow a lot faster. In fact, my understanding is that grindleworms were isolated from cultures of white worms by a Swedish woman quite a few years ago, and she selected for the ones that did better at higher temperatures.
Wishful thinking in Sweden? Higher temperatures? What?
I don't know. It just,
or they just already did and she just found them?
No, she selected for the ones that did better in the higher temperatures and took those out. And so apparently it's a different species that was coexisting with the white worms, which are closely related. I believe they're the same genus. But, I think the it's Incaitreus bulchhotsai or something like that is the grindleworms, and it's Incaitreus albidus is the white worms.
Mm.
That's without me looking at it, so I think that's about right. Anyway, they do better at higher temperatures, yeah. And the white worms do better in the 60s. So I would say try for mid-70s to low-80s.
If he takes it up out of the basement, maybe?
Yeah, and they will begin reproducing for you a lot faster.
Alrighty. He says, congrats on the new field recorder. What is your current microphone configuration? Are you using the built-in mic or multiple external mics?
Okay, well, yeah, we have two external mics, and then we have the built-in mics on the field recorder.
Last week we used the external mics.
And this week we're using just the onboard mics on the recorder itself to see how the settings differ.
Yeah, so that's another thing that mm-hmm. we want feedback for, to right. tell what works better. Because he says, the sound was good, but without a mute button for the mics, you will have a significant challenge in keeping the recording clean. An inline momentary switch would probably be your best bet if you were using external mics.
Yeah, so we're going to need to look into that, but I appreciate that suggestion. I think that could be helpful in a lot of ways. So we will look into that. I don't know how much one costs and whatnot, but it's a good thing to think about.
We can look into that. He has an interesting idea here, too. I kind of like it. He says, I think you could revisit some of the topics from quote-unquote old shows. Which they are old now. I don't even have... Them? Yeah, but I don't even have to put the quotation marks. They are just old. And have a best of Aquarimax Q&A. Especially when there are very few submissions like last week. You could also do topical shows like what to do when your system crashes or when you lose power for days. What should be in your aquarium toolkit or aquarium myth busting. You are a fount of knowledge and we would benefit from you sharing.
I like the idea. And actually, if you go back far enough, we did some of those.
At the beginning.
Yeah. And that's a really good idea. Mm-hmm. We should revisit some of these older ones. Mm-hmm. And because some of them, oh, wow. They're ancient, in 2009.
Well, and they really stink. I mean, your information is still good, but when we first started out, we were recording on his little teeny wee MP3 player that just happened to record sound, too.
Yeah, it wasn't very good when we first started. So, that's a really good idea.
I hadn't really come into my own as your plucky comic relief sidekick, either. I was pretty boring.
Well, I think it's a great idea. You know what I was also thinking? And I think we should do it. Let's do it. Let's do that.
Okay.
And I think something else we can do. We now have it set up so that it would be easy to do a show with call-in format.
That would be fun.
We would have to do it on the phone. In other words, we wouldn't be able to use our mics for that show. But just like we did with, we've done with the past...
On the interviews?
Half a dozen interviews that we've done. We just do it by phone and... I think that's okay, even though the sound quality is not quite as good. It's quite decent. Mm-hmm. It's phone quality. And we could just say, we're recording at this time. Anyone who wants to call in and just talk to us about whatever aquarium topic you want to, you can do that.
That would be fun.
So we haven't ever really done that. We've done interviews like that where we have one person call in.
But people have left us voice messages.
And people have left us voice messages, too. But in this format... We basically give everybody a number that they can call in on, and then they can join in and talk and listen to the other people talking at the same time. So it could be, we could have 15 different people talking. Theoretically, they could be talking at once. It wouldn't be very helpful, but we could have 15 people on the line and one of them talk, or we could have one person call in and then hang up, and then we say, okay, whoever wants to call in now can call in and have someone else do it. And maybe what we could do is say, okay, interest at this particular time on this particular day? Are there enough callers who want to do it? And if so, we just make that. That's the format for that show. And
once a month we do this is the phone one or something.
Yeah.
So I don't know if people are interested in that, tell us.
Yeah, because I've been thinking about that recently, that we can do it. We have the capability technologically to do it. So why don't we? It'd be fun. Mm-hmm. And we also need to do more interviews, and we need to do like the ones that Dr. Bob said.
Yeah,
it's been a long time since we've done an interview.
Good I think idea.
Wasn't James Carmack the last interview we did? I think so.
Yeah, I think so. Excuse me.
So we need to do some more.
Yep, perhaps after Christmas. Most people are pretty busy in December.
Right, but after that, we need to do it.
Yeah,
I've already contacted a few people who said they would be interested in doing interviews, just haven't
set it up.
So we need to do that.
Get them set up for the new year.
Yep. All right. Well, I think that's about it for this week then.
Okay. May the fish
be with you.